Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi everybody, this is The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times. After another fantastic week of European action, lots of controversy, in the opinion of Stuart Barnes, la plaisir du mouvement. Is that correct? Did I say that right, Stuart?
You said it quite beautifully.
Today it's Stuart Barnes and myself. We're known as the old firm, not because of our ages, although they're quite significant, but because we've been doing this job a long time and we both come from the same school where Stuart was a contemporary of mine at Paisley. Correct, Stuart?
I'm not certain we were contemporaries, but I do recall when you were espousing my cause for England, Jeff Cook decided that that must be the reason. It couldn't be anything to do with the way I played. So I think, as legend has it now, Steve, contemporary is the only way we can be described.
Well, of course, and he was right about that as well. You were my mate. Well, I not recommend you as an England player.
Quite right too.
We've seen some fantastic action this week. We're just going to go through them. We're going to go through four Heineken European Cup matches. Absolutely thrilling. And I think it's true to say that the competition, which began really slowly, has now burst out all over, although not without problems. Also, the four European Challenge Cup quarterfinals have also been played. So we know the semis in both competitions. Stuart, let's go straight on to your game. The excitement you showed about rugby itself and how it can be played, shone through your match report in the Times this morning from Toulouse and Sharks. La plaisir de mouvement, I think that summed it up, but clearly you were on cloud nine, just like Toulouse fans after the end of the game.
Yeah, I have been for a couple of years. You know, they may not be the most complete team, but what Toulouse are trying to do is almost redefine the game, and they're taking it back to a time before it was professional. And what I mean by that is professionalism took a route that was obsessed with organisation, structure and power. It was a route that said you couldn't play attacking rugby from your own half because there was no space and it was dangerous. And it was almost seen as the law of the game, you know, laid down by coaches from on high. And Toulouse have always been a stylish side, have always believed in the way you play. But in the last 2 years under Hugo Muller, adopting the great Pierre Villepreux's plaisir de mouvement, you are seeing a team taking ambition, accuracy, they call it efficiency, not accuracy, efficiency to new levels. And what I love about it is that their capacity to say, if it's on our own try line, we'll go just as we would if it was on 25 metres out. And the people who believe there is no space on the field anymore because everyone's huge, fast, fit and magnificent are being made to look idiots, because there is always acres of space on a pitch. And what Toulouse doing is manipulating it. They don't play structures, they play what is in front of them. And it was wonderful. And this is about the third time I've watched Toulouse in their European campaign produce similar sorts of rugby. And by the way, I thought the Sharks also played their part.
Yeah, they did. When you see space, it's funny because we were watching it at Sandy Park, and The pitch seemed to be about four times the size of it, four times the size that it normally is because of all the space. It seemed to be so many people running towards space or into space rather than towards the nearest tackler.
Well, Steve, you know, you get the situation is we've seen 15 years of normal professional club stroke regional rugby where it's all about going through the phases. That's the television phrase that I loathe.
Yeah.
And what it means is we get the ball, we run into a tackle, we recycle it, we go into a tackle again, we go down onto the floor. The plaisir de mouvement stresses that what you want to do when you play rugby is keep going forward, keep your eyes open, and don't hit the floor. It's almost as if rugby has decided that in its sort of Calvinistic determination to lack any style and any boldness, we've gone diametrically the other way. And that's why I'm excited about Toulouse, because I do believe that great teams who play thrilling rugby can influence other coaches. And who knows that in 10 years' time, the core of the game will be the way Toulouse play. And people always say to me, oh, you're a former fly half, blah, blah, blah. You just want running rugby. I've no interest in that. I've always been interested in winning rugby. And I would say to anyone who's going to criticise my love of the way Toulouse play, at the half-hour mark, it was a turbocharged scrum that set them on their way. And in the last 10 minutes of the first half, it was the quality of their catch and drive line out from 30 metres out to suck in defenders to make way for a beautiful try from Jean-Cruz Mellier. Toulouse are not just a team of basketball players. It's not what you used to call, well, you called the old super rugby, didn't you? Basketball rugby. Toulouse don't play that. Toulouse have a mighty pack and they have a balance to their game.
There does come a sort of collision, or there will be coming up later. You say the potential in your column this morning, the potential for rugby's poetic side was revealed to dazzling effect. But you also hint that when these Toulouse players come into England, into the national French squad with Fabien Galthié, he sometimes is a little bit suspicious of what they're bringing in. Is that a collision that can be worked out?
Yeah, I think it is, and you're absolutely right there. I mean, when you go on the website, Toulouse management, I think their owner says we're not just concerned with winning, though they do win most of the time, especially in France and Europe. We're concerned with the style. Now, of course, none of us would be naive to think that at international level, there isn't more focus on the result. Unfortunately, I do use that word, sometimes patriotism tips into nationalism and we just care about the result and nothing else. And I don't believe that's the way. But I understand that, you know, there's a World Cup coming and people aren't going to worry about the plaisir du mouvement if France lose by playing beautiful, stylish rugby when they could have won by tightening. So I do understand what Galtier is saying, but there's a balance here. And I felt France were on course for a collision in the autumn and in the early games of the Six Nations. They were getting quite prescribed in the way they played. I was watching them and thinking, I know what's coming. Then they lost that game. Intriguingly enough, they lost that game in Dublin against the core of the Leinster team, yet they played some really good rugby because, you know, let's not kid ourselves, Ireland at home is one of the toughest games in the world. And France found themselves that day, and then in the next two matches against England, we saw that thrilling movement. And against Wales, they were perhaps even better with the ball in hand. But what we also saw in the Irish and Welsh game in particular was a looseness that happens perhaps sometimes when you're so intent on seeking out space. I wouldn't say Toulouse are the greatest defensive team. Once or twice, the Sharks just glided through them with embarrassing ease. And for that reason, much as I love them, they've got their work cut out if they're going to beat Leinster, because if they defend as they did Saturday, and France defend as they did against Wales, then you know, Toulouse are going to struggle to win the European Cup, and France will struggle to win the World Cup. And that's where you get this collision, and that's where I think Galtier is trying to get the balance between his instinct, which is a more traditional one, and the Toulouse one, which is the driving force of the team. You look at the pack, it's predominantly Toulouse. You look at the halfbacks and you look at Ramos, who's a vital influence now. That's Toulouse as well. So there's a collision, and if the collision can be turned into a balance, then no one's going to beat France.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, in my opinion, Toulouse, in a way, they typify everything, the reason why we have the Heineken European Cup, and always did. And I always thought the times when Toulouse weren't so good towards the end of various coaching reigns, it was devalued. Did it sort of, when I think of the European Cup, I think of Toulouse first. Is that the same with you?
Steve, I think of rugby, and over the years, we've always sort of, you know, you have to compare it with the European Cup, as through most of my lifestyle time it's been in football. But when I think of the European Cup in football, you grow up, and tradition is very important, isn't it? Not just what's happening in front of your eyes and what's coming, what's been. And when I think of the football version, I always think first and foremost of Real Madrid. And when I think of continental rugby, there's no doubt at all, if there's a Real Madrid light, because our sport is so much smaller, it is Toulouse.
Yes.
You know, Toulouse, Real Madrid, that is the aristocracy. That's the word. I mean, I've read it a lot in football reports about Real Madrid in their pomp, aristocratic team. And aristocracy is a word that is often used with Toulouse because of the style they play. It's not just the fact they've won that French league and the European Cup so many times. It's the manner they've gone about it.
Let's go back to Friday evening with for the first tie. That was Leinster against Leicester. Stuart, well played Leinster, albeit for the 85th consecutive time at home. What struck me really was how disappointing Leicester were. Did you not think that they might get a bit closer than that?
Last Monday, if you remember, I said it's near as damn impossible that Leicester can win. So it's not hindsight. I didn't think they had a hope in hell. I don't think they're a very good team. And I think their performance against Edinburgh the previous Friday highlighted that they weren't in the same league. They've had a couple of good games where they just seem to have found their way in the Premiership. It's not the same level, and was no surprise. I felt they lacked imagination. I felt when in doubt, they kicked too often, and they had to think. You play Leinster, if you kick, and there were quite a lot of good kicks, there are also a lot that are a metre too long. And if they're a metre too long, you know, this guy, Keenan, is playing spectacular rugby. O'Brien and Lowe, they're a tremendous back three. And what Leicester did, they fed the counter-attacking urge of Leinster. And Leicester are not a quick team. Leinster are a very quick team. And they said to them, you decide the pace of this game. And the moment they did that, half the century was inevitable. So, I thought that Leinster put together the most complete performance of the weekend, but I thought that it was very much helped by a very naive Leicester team, but no great surprise because I don't think they're a very good team.
Okay, they've had enough time now by now to rebuild, so they're certainly lacking something. Let's just move on a bit to the fate of Saracens yesterday in La Rochelle. La Rochelle were almost beatable against Gloucester last weekend, but probably not beatable at all against Sarries this weekend. I mean, I've always thought, and I think Sarries probably in their hearts thought too, that they're very competitive in the league, but I didn't think they had the extras to be really competitive in the latter stages. But fair enough, La Rochelle back on form, Stuart, and another watchable French team now catapulted into the semi-finals.
They're opposite to Toulouse, aren't they? But I think real problem for Saracens was the fact that Gloucester gave them such a shake-up and it focused their minds again. There was almost a sense that Gloucester game, it's like, well, it's an English team at home, we won't lose this. And the narrowness of that margin made them a very different team. And this took me back, Steve, to the early part of the 2010s, when Saracens were just starting to win in England and they were making semi-finals and finals. And I remember losing, I think, two semis in a final, maybe to Toulon and Clermont. And in every one of those big matches, they were beaten up at the breakdown. And, you know, they were playing some nice rugby. They were developing their game. But they lost all the collisions. And you won't beat the big French guns if you lose the collisions. And nearly a decade on, it was deja vu. They just got wiped out at the collisions. And I've read people say the referee was disgraceful. But I wouldn't say Andrew Brace I would have at the top of the world pecking order. But when one team is going forward at breakdowns and dominating and the other team is on the back foot, you will always get a major discrepancy in penalty count. And those penalties weren't because of Brace. They were because of the power of Toulon. And, you know, I think if the most complete performance came from Leinster, the most stylish from Toulouse, this was about power. It was the most powerful performance. And they're going to be a hard team to beat. They're not easy on the eye like their French counterparts Toulouse, but they play it a different way, and they're hard to beat because the way they play it, they do it very well.
I've always thought it's definitely in terms of power, you're absolutely right. And I don't think they've ever come remotely close to replacing Will Skelton. I don't think that young Hugh Tizard, this lock they signed from Harlequins, is anything remotely yet in that league. And it was sort of ironic but very telling how well Skelton played yesterday. And I think they've got sort of bit of a rebuilding to do for Saracens, but they do have an amazing academy and they got some great players. So I think in maybe a year's time they might be slightly back up to those levels. But I agree with you about I agree with you about the breakdown, so important. I think the thing is, under some referees, it is way more important than against others. So disappointing, Saracens and Leicester. I thought Saracens put up more of a fight than Leicester. But again, we can come on to an English team which did put up an absolute whale of a fight at Sandy Park. Exeter were out there with, I think it was their third choice hooker in Frost, a second or third choice scrum half. They're really unfamiliar looking team, people that I'd hardly seen before in their colours. Stormers were colossal in size, could hardly get off through the bus door when they arrived. But a magnificent win for Exeter, and I think it was the greatest Exeter performance I've ever seen, which, considering how much the team has changed and how many people are leaving and how big they're rebuilding, was sensational. And for Exeter to play like that, it's going to be incredibly tough to repeat it in the semi-finals. But to play like that at the time when season tickets are back on sale and all that, I thought was incredibly timely. It was full of emotion and passion. Stadium was like it used to be, packed. And people like Frost, the young hooker, were just tremendous. And actually, even though I think Exeter thought that they would be wiped out in the scrum, well, they really were down to the bare bones, but actually hardly ever went back. So I don't know how much of it you saw, Stuart, but they played the Stormers to a total standstill. It was a lifetime performance by some of those young lads.
Yeah, I mean, I go back and think the 28-20 semi-final win against Toulouse might have been the high point, but I take what you're saying, Steve. That was an Exeter team at the very peak of their powers. And you look at this one and you see names like Wyatt there and you see Frost and Beckinsall at scrum half and you're thinking, blimey, how are they going to do that? And I don't want to spoil the party, but I don't think the Stormers turned up. I think when John Dobson was on this show a couple of months ago, he was intimating that they'll give it a go as far as they can, but it never sounded like it was a priority. And I think you get to the quarterfinals, it's got to be a priority. You're going to get wasted. And they did. And so that's the South African angle. The English angle, I thought maybe that was the best structured performance, the best coach there. Everything Exeter did, the pattern was right. They stayed in shape. This was game planning well done, as opposed to narrowing of inventions. Well done to them for that. It was a brilliant effort. I think a couple of names. Frost. Now, this might sound like hindsight, but believe me, if you look at my busy old notebook, you'll see Frost brackets England squad when he was at Wasp. I just kept watching throughout his career, ever since I've seen him, his dynamism is sensational. And, you know, I wrote a piece at the end of last week. Hookers don't have to hook anymore, so that's taken out of the equation. So if he can throw, you know, this bloke surely should be someone you'd be thinking he had something a little bit different. He's been a great signing for Exeter.
Mm.
He has accelerated their type five. He made a big difference there. And because of that, young Beckinsale's gone really well. Now, I felt that the Maunder brothers were not good enough at this level. And a youngster's come in and he's sharpened them up. I felt that Rob Baxter made a Horlicks at the start of this season, the end of last season, when he started mixing and matching his fly halves. Joe Simmons wasn't playing well, but this bloke had done so much for them. You had to ride through that crisis. And he didn't. And I felt that Simmons lost his way and his confidence. And as you say, Steve, it wasn't obvious, but it was an almost faultless performance.
What I totally agree with you is about the game planning. You could almost sense in everything that happened that that Exeter identified it as a key area. I mean, the tackling and the defensive shape was brilliant. Frost, as you say, was brilliant. And also, God, you know, we were reminded, sometimes Henry Slade can't get into England games. We were reminded of his excellence. I mean, he had two booming 50-22s, which both led to tries in the end. And some of them were played like they haven't for ages. And, you know, it was vastly encouraging for them, vastly encouraging. And
well, Henry Slade can't sometimes get into the England game because of the manner England have played.
Yeah.
Wooden, predictable, overly structured. Exeter are very structured, but they're not wooden and predictable in their structure. And there's a massive difference there. And England provide no fluidity in the last 2 years under Eddie Jones. And let's be honest, they've not been that ambitious under Steve Borthwick. And you have to have flexibility and fluidity if you want to use him. Otherwise, you might as well pick two tanks and stick them in the centre. And the little tuck, the little passes, the little shifts, the vision, they were all there again. So, and like we say, this was what Exeter have always been really good at. Their management has put together brilliant plans that have always outwitted the English opponents. And they did it again. They've always had an amazing spirit. You know, it comes of the academy. It comes of people being forced to live within 5-10 miles of the ground and not being able to live in Bristol because they fancied that, making them go there. This was a heart and soul and intellectual Exeter performance. It was great to see.
Stuart, the secondary competition, occasionally it stirs the blood, sometimes it doesn't. I thought this weekend it was good. Scarlets had a really rough time in many areas, but they put Claremont away, really rather shakily at the end. But Scarlets threw against Claremont, which I thought was good. It's nice to have a Welsh team in there somewhere. And also in the nationalistic sense, nice that Benetton beat Cardiff because they were clearly excited. There was clearly a big crowd. And Benetton and now can hold their heads up into the semi-final. So at least two welcome results there, I suppose, for the competition.
Brilliant. You know, Italy should really have beaten Wales. They blew that.
Mm.
And Benetton beating Cardiff is just a reminder that the Italian rugby is on an upward curve. And, you know, Italy didn't get a win, but they played some good rugby. And I think it's quite important. And I think as a neutral rugby fan, we should be delighted for any Italian success. They're going to find it hard against Toulon, who look set for a fifth Challenge Cup final, but they haven't won one yet. And what I would say as well, Scarlets, you mentioned the point, they've had a difficult year. They knocked out Clermont. Now, I was hearing that Leicester were back in business because they beat Clermont. And I kept saying, Clermont are rubbish.
Yes.
I think Scarlets will have to be better to beat Glasgow, who I think Glasgow a good bet to take on Toulon in the final, and maybe, just maybe, a win for Scotland.
That does look like the likely final, Glasgow-Toulon. A lot depends then on how much I think Toulon want it. Sometimes you go down there and they can't be bothered. Next day you think, oh, here we are again. They won't want to be bothered, and they play like diamonds. So that's anyway. It's a worthwhile competition this time.
And yeah, Scotland centre Steve in tandem.
Yes,
against the Scarlets, and maybe then Toulon in the final. You know, some tremendous talent still there. And interestingly enough, no English teams. Does that tell us anything about the strength and depth of English club rugby? I don't know.
Well, I think it does, because I think we already know that the lack of a really convincing fourth and fifth team is a bit disappointing. But let's just before we wrap up, Stuart, in Europe, Leinster playing every game at home, and that's a farce?
Yes, it is. Even if they'd have conjured a way that they had to play the quarter or semi away, that should have been the case. No team should have three home games.
Also, how long is the URC and Europe going to exist in this format with South Africans? Because some of them look knackered, complaining about the roots up there, and I cannot believe that some of the South African teams have got to come back up this week. Surely there's going to come a time very soon where this gets called into question.
It is the European Champions and the European Challenge Cup, and it should be. I'm afraid URC, for whatever reason, were keen to accept South Africans. And I understand for financial reasons why South Africa would want to do it. But this has always been part of putting together a global world order. Yeah. And it will move from URC to an international order where we will have nothing but test match rugby. And for 5 years, it will be great. And thereafter, we'll be bored witless, and there'll be a few people, private equity, who will have made many millions and won't give a damn.
That's a cynical but very realistic view. Okay, that's enough for Europe for now. Soon we'll be speaking to our Jess Hayden as another weekend of the Six Nations coming up. We're now joined by Jess Hayden, our superstar of rugby coverage. I was going to say women's rugby coverage, but just rugby coverage full stop. Morning, Jess. Three big games coming up. Lots of issues. Where are we going first, and where's the big action this weekend?
Hi, Steve. I think that the big action this weekend is Wales-England at Cardiff Arms Park. It's a sellout crowd there in Cardiff, and I'm very excited because I'm going as a fan. I said to the editors, I'm not writing this one. I just want to go as a fan. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, well done. No, they never let me do that when I go up. Every time I ask to go somewhere, they say, no, it's too expensive. Wales, England, there's a bit of a head of steam being built up by Wales because they have won two games reasonably well. But would I be wrong in saying that your experts are slightly anxious about fitness and the pace of Wales and their ability to last the whole 80 minutes?
Yeah, so I have been impressed with Wales at this Six Nations. I really have. And in terms of their fitness, it's so improved from the World Cup. And I've been speaking to Wales players this week about why that is. And there are many reasons, but those centralised contracts that mean they spend all their time together in the Vale by the countryside in South Wales. And then they're kind of released back to clubs. I think that's a big part of it. They're spending a lot of time in the gym. So they do look fit. I think my concern that I said last week, and quite a few listeners have put in touch because they disagree with me, which is absolutely fine, is about the fitness of the front row, in particular Cilia Tupanotu, because she's a fantastic player and I do really admire her, and she's great. I was just concerned about putting too much pressure on her and kind of heralding her as this star player when I still think there's a lot of her game that needs to improve before I'm comfortable doing that. But I am really excited to see her against a front row that includes players like Sarah Byrne, who's much more of a dynamic prop. I think that will be good for her development as much as kind of a test of how strong a carrier she is.
Very good point. And Sarah Byrne is just, well, off the scale. I mean, it's almost like an object of wonder, the way she does get around the field. What would England do with their team? Will they go flat out? Will they give some new people a go, Jess? Or who would you like to see in the team of like fringe players that you admire?
That's a really good question, Steve. I think that the game plan that they've been playing so far, and we spoke about it a bit last week about keeping Sarah Byrne out on the wing and giving her a bit more time to be creative and put pressure on weaker wings. I think that's the game plan they'll be going for. Emma Singh is a player that I really hope to get more. She gets more game time. She's a phenomenal player in the Premier 15s, and she plays at Gloucester Hartbury, where she's been sensational. And lots of the Wales players play in Gloucester Hartbury. So I think using her expertise, she knows the Wales team potentially better than anyone and knows how they like to attack and knows their weaknesses as well. So I would hope to see her get some game time as well this week.
I have to say that from viewing the game at Newcastle, I just thought there were three or four England players coming through now to world-class to replace other world-class players. It's very, very significant. But just before we go on to the other games, Jess, there's an issue off the field regarding periods and changes shorts and all that. Now, people thinking, well, changes shorts, what's that about? But actually, it is a very, very significant issue for players, isn't it?
Absolutely. So a lot of the players in the Six Nations play in white shorts. And when you're on your period and you have white shorts on, it obviously adds that bit of worry. Are you going to have a leak that people are going to see? And is that going to be embarrassing? I've spoken to professional players who've had that experience and say it's absolutely humiliating. You just want to get off the field as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So Ireland, at the start of the Six Nations, announced that they were changing the colour of their shorts from white to navy blue. Now, it's not a decision that was made by the players. It was more to do with Canterbury, their sponsor, and and Ireland themselves. The players say that it's good for them to have kind of the option to wear them. But I've also heard players say that they feel like they're wearing training kit when they're playing, and also that the shorts don't fit very well. So it's all about making sure that these options aren't just a PR thing. And to me, we see what the Lionesses have done in football. They've changed their shorts to a navy blue, but those shorts have leak protection in them. So it's like an extra layer of protection so that if you were to have a leak, it wouldn't come through your shorts. So it's about making sure that it's not just what's the most obvious thing we can do to look like we're supporting our women. And I wrote a piece in the week because I spoke to a few Wales players, and then I spoke to the Wales head coach, Owen Cunningham, and the Wales head physiotherapist for the women, Joe Perkins, about what they're doing for their women. And it was just so much more comprehensive period tracking software so that the coaches and medical staff can see in real time where their players are in the cycle, and not just looking at what happens when they're menstruating, but also at what phases in the cycle were they able to get personal best in the gym because they've got a bit more energy and more strength as well, and at what points are they more likely to tear an ACL. And we know that ACL tears in particular are very kind of prominent in the Wales squad, and they're without a few key players because of ACL injuries and ligament injuries in general. And it's been really eye-opening, because to me that's the kind of support that helps players, because it's helping them understand their own cycle, and they're also offered kind of tailored support like period underwear, so it removes the need to wear a pad or a tampon, and wearing a tampon while playing rugby can be quite dangerous. And instead they're kind of just knickers that soak up the blood, and they're also offered protective pads for their bras to help prevent them being hit when they've got sore breasts because they're on their period. So it's really kind of breaking down the taboos, talking about what these issues are, and then doing proper things to support players. And I think that's so much more important than changing the colour of their shorts. And Wales themselves, I spoke to the players and they said, actually, we don't want to change the colour of our shorts from white to red or to dark blue or to green, as it would probably be in Wales. They said, we just don't want to do it because we don't need to. We like playing in white shorts. And I think that's telling, that because they're so well supported in every other area, they're not that worried about leaks because they understand their periods, they understand what they need to eat, they understand how they need to hydrate, and they have tailored knickers so they don't have those leaks. And so, yeah, it's been really interesting. I've been looking into it a lot this week. And
I hope everyone read the piece to which you referred where you hinted that, PR gestures are one thing, but actually it's a much bigger subject than just banging, say, you're in new shorts sort of thing.
Exactly right, yeah.
Okay, two more games on the weekend. We'll come to your predictions in a minute. I'm sorry to lay that one on you. But Italy versus Ireland. You really do sort of fear for Ireland again, don't you? Because Italy are not playing too badly at all.
Yeah, I mean, if you looked at the scoreline from last week against England, you might consider that Italy are having a poor Six Nations. They're not. They are a strong team. Ireland are struggling, and I do think that Italy will win this match. As I said last week, for Ireland, it's almost a case of get this tournament over and done with and then look at what they can build on.
France-Scotland, I'm slightly confounded because I thought Scotland would way much improve when they played England. Obviously, it hasn't really turned out that way. Is that a bit of a Rorke's drift thing for Scotland away in France, Jess?
Yeah, it's the fixture that no one wants to play in, is it? And Scotland have had a bad run of form so far, but they've been building on their performances, and we see them slightly improved in the second round. So I'm hoping that they're able to learn from that, and they've been using a psychologist to try and get themselves over those really narrow point differences, because that constantly happens with Scotland. So although I don't think that this will be a tight match, I'd like to see Scotland be a bit more competitive in the second half, because that tends to be the time for me that Scotland kind of put their heads down and are unable to take advantage of opportunities on the pitch.
Jess, this is going to sound really awful against Wales, but do they have any realistic chance against England, or will it just be a brave performance will send them along the road a little bit?
I don't want to write Wales off, because they have improved massively since the World Cup, and they've had two strong performances so far. I think they've also got their best chance of beating England in a few years, because England are without so many of their key players, we keep saying, through injury or other reasons. So there is the chance. And you know what? I would not be surprised at all if Wales are ahead for a bit of this game, at least. I do think that England have the strength in their bench to be able to pull away, especially in kind of final 20 minutes. We know England tend to just kind of rampage on in the last quarter of the match, and it feels really disappointing when you've had a quite competitive match up to that point. So I do think England will win this match, but I really don't want to write Wales off. I think that they have something, that there's momentum building. The atmosphere in camp just feels brilliant at the moment. I do think that's important. So we'll see. A sellout crowd at Cardiff Arms Park is the perfect location, really, isn't it, for some kind of miracle. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed, really, because that would be so entertaining and brilliant for the competition.
It would, and a really tight game would be fantastic. And there's the prediction. Jess says she wouldn't be surprised if Wales are not leading for a bit of the game. Well, Wales will hope it's the last bit of the game when they're leading. Jess, thanks a million. But please, in Cardiff, it's a student city. You're going as a fan. I don't want any misbehaviours, and I expect you to take a lead and at least keep one eye on the game.
I will, I promise. I'll be on my best behaviour.
Thank you very much. That's our Jess Hayden. Jess, we're at Cardiff. Have a lovely time. I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thanks, Steve.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
finally, our god or goddess of the week. Stuart, I suspect you may be revisiting the south of France for yours.
I am, yeah. But I'm not going for a player. I'm going to go for Pierre Villepreux. He's still carrying on his plaisir de mouvement. It's available in England and France. It's a philosophy. And instead of being an Olympian god, he's somewhere high on Mont Ventoux, looking down, and his views on rugby are changing the game, I hope, for the better. Pierre Villepreux for me. Steve, yourself?
Extraordinary one, and I can't disagree with that. I'm just going to go really back down to earth and go for Ollie Woodburn on Exeter's left. Tremendous player, great attacker, brilliant defender, excellent kicker, and just a joy to watch, a joy to talk to. So we've got a philosophic contender this week and a straight-up, hard-nosed rugby player.
Go, cool.
Thanks for listening to us this week on The Ruck, and thanks a million for Stuart in excited form there. Let's hope that we're both still excited for the rest of the season, Stuart, and through the World Cup. Thank you, mate.
Thanks, Steve.
And thank you to everyone who's listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.